In the seminary, each seminarian has a certain apostolic work, something that he does as a practical side of his education. It might be working one year in a soup kitchen, another year helping with street evangelization, another year working in a parish or a school. One year, when I was in Rome, my friend had a year of giving tours to St. Peter's Basilica to various groups. And he would cater the tour towards the group. So, if he had a group from a parish or from a diocesan group or maybe Knights of Columbus group, he would talk more about the theology, be able to engage it at a higher level because they have sort of a theological knowledge going into it. But if he had a group that was not Christian, he might talk a little bit more about the art and the architecture, trying to show them the faith by the various signs that they see in the church. But one day, he got to the group, and the whole group was from Japan. And all the members of that group were either Buddhist or Shinto, so they knew very little or anything about Christianity. So as he went through, he talked about the art, the architecture, the sculptures, the history, and brought in some easy points about Christianity and Catholicism whenever he could. As you leave St. Peter's, to the left, there's the Eucharistic chapel with a beautiful tabernacle by Bernini, but it has heavy drapes in front of it to cancel out the noise coming from all the tourists, and you can only go in there if you're going in to pray. And the tourists were interested about this, so he explained a basic idea of what Catholics believe about the Blessed Sacrament and what that chapel was for. At the end, when he took them out to the porch of the Basilica, which overlooks Rome, he took some questions. And one of the men in the group, an elderly man, asked if they really believed that that's God in that room. And the young man said, "Yes, we do," and explained a little bit about the real presence. The Japanese man said, "Well, if that's the case, then it's more precious than any of the sculptures or paintings you showed me today." And he insisted on going back in, and he prayed for some time in that chapel. Today we delve more deeply into that story which my friend's Japanese tourist had just discovered, the one that Jesus is presenting to his disciples for the first time. And it is an opportunity to rediscover the great gift that we have been given here in the Eucharist. It's so easy to take God's nearness for granted. The apostles certainly did. Look at the many times they walked with the Son of the Living God, and instead were squabbling about who the greatest was, or who would sit on his right and his left in the kingdom of heaven. But don't we all sometimes do the same things? At times, before we even receive communion, we might already be thinking about the parking lot. The greatest miracle imaginable has just taken place, but we're thinking about the mundane details of life. It was similar in our first reading today. Elijah had just worked an incredible miracle through the Lord on the Mount of Carmel. And at the time, the Israelites had turned away from the worship of the true God and were worshiping Baal, which is a pagan idol. And so he gathered all of the priests of Israel and the priests of Baal. And he said, "Whichever God is able to send fire down upon the offering is the true God." And so in front of all the Israelites, the priests of Baal tried to bring fire down upon their offering, and nothing happened. The same thing was done by Elijah, and he even poured water all over the altar in order to make it more dramatic. And fire came down and consumed the entire offering, including the altar itself. Thus, God proved that day that he was the true God, and that turned the Israelites away from the worship of an idol back to the true and living God. But Elijah faced some persecution by the people that were faithful to Baal after that event. So much so that he forgot about that miracle. In fact, he says in today's reading, "This is enough, Lord, take my life." And what happens? God doesn't take his life, but he gives him bread for the journey. And strengthened by this bread, Elijah is able to journey for 40 days. When he forgot about the first miracle, God gave him a second. And this was a bread of life that lasted for 6 weeks. But we have access to the body and blood of our Lord, Jesus Christ. This is a bread for a much longer journey. While Elijah was able to go through the desert to Mount Horeb, our bread of life will bring us to the very gates of heaven. In today's gospel, Jesus recalls the first bread from heaven in the Old Testament, the manna in the desert, just as he has the last couple of weeks. He recalls the Jews' ancestors ate this bread but died. However, this new bread, Jesus says, came down from heaven so that one may eat it and not die. Just yesterday, I was teaching a baptism class. Maybe some of you were in it. And sometimes I learn things in a class like that that I'd never thought of before I walked in. I was explaining that it's a good practice to remember the date of your baptism, especially in the family with children. To have some simple celebration, maybe light the baptismal candle, because we celebrate the beginning of our natural lives every year. Why not our supernatural lives? And it hit me that while natural life gives the child an opportunity to be baptized, that birth will ultimately end in death. But the new life in baptism is eternal. It's the greatest gift that any parent can give to his or her child. And the birthday that we pay attention to is but a shadow of the one we often forget. Likewise, we spend so much time obsessing over earthly food. Think of the time and money that goes into the careful planning of menus, the counting of calories, and the avoidance of the evil high fructose corn syrup. And rightly so. We should take care of our bodies. But then for all that preparation, we're all going to die anyway. I hate to break it to you. Maybe we'll live a little longer because of a careful diet, but maybe not. And how much time do we spend preparing for communion? I would wager a fraction of the time. And yet, this is the food that will help us to live forever. It's a foolproof remedy to death, not just a strategy to prolong our lives a little. So, if we know what this gift is really about and what it's capable of doing for us, how do we express it? By adoration. And I'm not just talking about formal adoration here on Thursdays, although that's a great start. We adore the Blessed Sacrament in many ways. For instance, we only receive the Eucharist worthily. If we are aware of any serious sin in our lives, we must go to confession before we receive communion. We wouldn't invite our bosses to our house if it was in a mess. Why would we then invite the living God into our souls if it's not been made clean by the sacrament of confession and the forgiveness of our Lord? We prepare ourselves to receive the Blessed Sacrament, priests included. It can be so easy just for me to throw on vestments and come out and say Mass. But I realize that when I do that, I'm not prepared to gain all I should from this great gift or to express the greatness of this gift to others. Likewise, we should spend some time before Mass getting ready for communion with God. Even if it's just a couple of minutes before you get your family up and ready for Mass, or looking at the readings the night before, or arriving a few minutes early to recollect ourselves and get ready for that Mass, spend those moments thanking God for what you are about to experience in the Blessed Sacrament. And also have a spirit of adoration. I would encourage you as often as possible to come to that holy hour on Thursday evening, or drop in sometime during any day, even if it's not Thursday, to pray before Christ outside of Mass. And even if this is not always possible, simple actions are, like making the sign of the cross when we pass a Catholic church, reminding us of the presence of God, or spending a little time midweek, looking forward to our next communion and giving thanks for the one that preceded it. God does not need this adoration and praise, but he loves it, because he knows that it begins to change us and enables us to respond to his love. And likewise, when we're here in Mass, take the initiative to pray the prayers, sing the songs, even if you're not that good at singing. We still like to see you trying, because that's our full and active participation. We participate with the priest. It's not just his sacrifice. It's all of ours. So if we can integrate a few of these strategies into our spiritual lives, we can begin to rekindle the fires of Eucharistic love within us. And far from taking for granted the gift we've been given, we will begin to be like that Japanese traveler who began his tour of St. Peter's to see yet another museum, but ended it kneeling in adoration before his Creator.